So, I don't know. I mean, you got to do something to actually, you know, study the stuff that you, you know, are learning.
This Friday?
What does that look like on Hillary's schedule?
I have a test.
Another one, huh?
Physical electronics.
There'd be a lot of electronics tests in one day. Yeah.
What's our next feedback test? I don't think we know. Next Monday?
Hillary
next
looks
Wednesday
at her schedule.
Should be
well, I'm not going to have it on my calendar. What do you mean? I'm not in that class.
I just think you should have another test.
No, I don't. I'm free Thursday night, so I can study for both tests Thursday night, so Friday might work.
Okay.
I don't want to take it any time at all, but I suppose Friday would probably be ideal.
Hope I don't have a heat transfer test.
I mean, if you want both of them on Friday rather than one on Monday, then it's okay. I'm not going to be here this next weekend, so I won't be able to do a review session unless it's really late on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, I'm working all weekend, so
or
probably it
could still be
Yeah, we could do Thursday review.
Even
should
if
we do
the test is on Monday.
Or whenever, yeah, whenever the test is. You know, so is review Thursday good for you too, Greg?
Sure.
Thursday?
Yeah. Sure you don't have a class
today?
Okay.
Yeah,
all okay, so we'll put review here. you always have to go to some work appointment or something on
yeah,
Thursday.
Yeah,
like
6 to 7.
So, Sunday?
Yeah, why?
I don't know, what time do you?
Yeah, 7 o'clock.
We might be able to take a little bit of lab time, too. I don't know whether our, if our boards haven't come in, then we probably certainly could.
Yeah.
Thursday lab or after or something,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I know, I'm kind of. So, well, anyway, we'll think about that when the time comes a little closer. An exam, well, I guess we wait till Austin gets here or what?
Yeah.
I mean, he's one quarter of the class, you know. Okay, so we finished pretty much this, you know, transmission lines and, you know, the network analyzer stuff, which, you know, is the S parameters and all that stuff that goes with waves and things. And so that'll, I think, we'll stop the exam at. But there's still a few things we need to go back and pick up that we didn't do in Electronics 1 or, I mean, you know, that are still kind of fundamental that you kind of have to have a little bit of an idea about. So chapter 8 is the first one of those, and it has to do with the high-frequency models for transistors. We never put in the capacitances. And, of course, now that you played with the network analyzer, you know if they have leads on them, there's inductances, too, and all that kind of stuff, right? Hi, Carlos.
Would that be a big difference when there's high frequencies?
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, when there's high frequencies, you know, a capacitor is 1 over J omega C, you know, and omega is 0, then it's not there, right? I mean, it's like an open circuit. And an inductor is J omega L, and so that's like a wire, you know, at DC. And that's what we normally approximate both of those things as, you know, something that's not connected is an open circuit, you know, and something that is connected is a perfect connection. So at low frequencies, you know, even down, you know, what we've done works quite nicely probably at audio frequencies. You know, that's pretty much most of the places where we've, you know, built amplifiers. We built one that was a common gate amplifier that was at higher frequencies. But that topology was kind of nicely chosen to work at higher frequencies without much thought. So... I think the basic thing that's really important about this is that you understand that there are these parasitic capacitances built into the transistors, and you need to understand where they are and a little bit of what they come from. I don't know. It seems like in physical electronics they might talk a little bit more about, you know, what they come from and how to calculate them from first principles and those kind of things. But for us, we just kind of have to have an idea that it's there because we're using these devices, and you know, if you ignore them, it can be kind of devastating in some cases. So the first transistor I'd like to look at for that is the field effect transistor. So if you think about, we'll do FET models. And then we'll do BJT models. And this one I'm going to do is called the hybrid pi model. So, if you think about an FET, you know, it can be a JFET like this, or could be a MOSFET like this. Drawing an enhancement mode here. Either one, our model has been like this. Drain up here, the source and the gate. Drain, source, and gate. So we have the drain, the gate here, and the source down here. This guy being GM, VGS. These are small signal models we're looking at, VGS, because usually that's where we're worried about it. I mean, those capacitances are still there in large signal models, but generally, our large signals are DC, and so they aren't as important. Okay. So what I'd like to do, unfortunately, I don't have another color here. Too bad. Maybe I do. I need some pens back here. Yes. These guys have come in handy. Okay. So, what I'd like to do is add the new stuff here. And maybe you can help me do this here. What would you suspect, you know, if you look at these things and think about physically how they are, where would you expect to see parasitic capacitances popping up?
Oh.
I mean, where in this model would you expect, you know, parasitic capacitances to pop up? I mean,
the drain and the source.
Well, the drain and the source is kind of, you know, it's just mostly a conductor. Like if I turn this thing on, it's just kind of like a wire. So, yeah, I mean, there could be a little bit there, but it's not the biggest one. Where do you see a big capacitor there? Basically the gate, yeah, the gate and the channel, right? I mean, there's an insulator in between you. You can see the little, you know, there's no, it's a space there. That means it looks like kind of like a capacitor, right? And so, if you think about it, there's between the gate and the thing, there's a capacitor, and we call this one here, whoops, can't write here, C. GS, or gate to source, and there's also one, you know, up here. And this would be CGD. Okay. And those are the biggest ones there, really. If you have a capacitor that's kind of shorted out by something, you know, it doesn't really end up being super significant, right? So, you know, between drain and source, you know, there could be a little capacitance there if you have the thing turned off, but it's not very much, not as much as between the gate and the source, because remember, there's a very thin oxide here, right? And the capacitance is epsilon A over D, right? A is the area of the plates, right? And the D is the distance between, so that oxide is very thin, and so even though there's not much area, you can still get a little capacitance. And you know, these you can look in the data sheets, basically CGS and is a, you know, kind of on the order of, oh, maybe 100 picofarads or something like that, and same thing for CGD. That might be a little bit big for, you know, might be down at sometimes 5 picofarads, you know, maybe I should put 10 to 100 or something, something like here. Sometimes it depends on what kind of a transistor you're looking at, 10 to 100 picofarads, and probably about the same here. Now, that's not very much capacitance, but you know, it can make a pretty big difference, because what happens when you hook this thing up, before we said there was no gate current, and now there's some gate current to charge the capacitances. And, you know, if you think about this in terms of a digital circuit, we use, you know, these kind of transistors up here, these MOSFETs and digital circuits. Now that means that we have to charge up the gate before it turns on the transistor, right? And that slows us down, right? So, you know, we'd like to be able to turn things on instantly. Well, now you got a, you know, you got an RC time constant that you got to worry about. Right? And you'd like to turn things off instantly too, right? You got the same RC time constant to discharge the gate, right? And you're now beginning to see, you know, a little bit of where some of the power is actually, you know, goes away. It's charging up and discharging those gates. You know, actually, we usually think about capacitors as being lossless items. But if you're charging them up and then you're discharging them, like through a wire or through a, you know, a drain to source, you know, channel that's turned on or whatever, you're losing energy there, right? So that's one thing you see when you're dealing with processors. You'll see that the power dissipated in the processor goes up significantly as you increase the switching speed, you know, the charging and discharging all the time. Yeah, right. So, you know, if you want a fast processor, you'll have a hot one. So I guess the next thing we ought to think about, and then, you know, maybe I should show you in the data sheets where these things are. Let's see if we can bring that up here. Assuming I can type my password right. Oh, it says my caps lock is on. Okay, so let's go just look up for like a J310. So here's a, you know, these are like P-channel J, or N-channel JFETs we use in the lab. And so if you look at this here, you'll see, you know, they have absolute maximum ratings and so on. Then they got the electrical characteristics. And somewhere down here, they'll have the small signal characteristics. Okay, here we go, CDG. So this is 2.5 picofarads. You know, these are pretty good transistors. And CSG, that's the same thing as CGS, is like 5 picofarads. So, you know, they're not large, but, you know, kind of small. And you can also see that they vary as a function of voltage here. And why would you expect the capacitance to vary as you change this, oops, what did I do here? Yeah, let's see here. So gate to source voltage here, as I change VGS here, notice as it becomes more negative, right, the capacitance goes down. So this is actually, you're thinking about a p-n junction here, right? And as you reverse bias it more, see, when you reverse bias a p-n junction, you know, it's kind of like there's a there's, you know, the two conductors, and then there's this depletion region in between, right? As you reverse bias it more, you make the depletion region bigger, right? Which spreads the conductors out, and it makes the capacitance go down.
Yeah,
the D goes up, right? Yeah, the D goes up, so the capacitance goes down. And you can see that right here in these, you know, these pictures here. So, you know, the CGS and the DS, you know, they drop off. Actually, in some cases, this is useful, like, suppose you wanted a variable frequency oscillator, something that would change frequencies with a applied voltage. Well, then you can put a diode in there, and the diode, if you reverse bias it, looks like a capacitor, right? And so if you change the reverse bias voltage on that capacitor, on that diode, you can change the, you know, the D, which changes the capacitance, and that'll change the frequency of your LC circuit, which will then change the frequency of the oscillator. So, you know, what might be a feature to somebody, or a bug for somebody, is a feature for somebody else. So anyway, you know, if there's anything else on here that would be interesting to look at here. More stuff we haven't talked about, but not about not about capacitance. So let's look at the effect of this capacitor right here in a common source amplifier. Okay. In fact, this is kind of a general thing. So what I want to do, we call this the Miller effect, and it's actually a feedback effect. And it comes from any time you have an inverting amplifier. So if I have an amplifier here with a gain of minus A, you know, inverting amplifier. And I put in my voltage here. This, I call this Vn. And anytime there's some component up here, which all in this case I'll just call this ZF, because it's kind of like the feedback. You know, this comes out here. This is V out, which equals minus A V in. Okay? So if I want to think about, there's a current coming in here, IN. So if I look at VN over IN, and these are both phasor quantities here. This would be a phasor quantity too. So VN over IN would be the input impedance, right? And that's going to be equal to, well, let's see. This is actually, what kind of feedback is this? Do you remember this is parallel on this side right here, right? And it's measuring the voltage over here. So this is parallel voltage feedback, right? And parallel voltage feedback, you remember, what did that do? A parallel was for current input, right? Anytime the input was a current input, well, ideally what you want is zero input impedance, right? And so what this is going to tend to do, this ZF element here, is going to lower our input impedance, right? Which in our case, if we had a capacitor there, what it's going to do is make a big capacitance down here. So let's check and see what this would be. So Vn is equal to Vn, but In is equal to, well, it's going to be Vn minus V out, right, over ZF. Do you agree? This is IN right there. VN minus V out over ZF, right? Because none goes in here, so it's all over there. there. I mean, if I had an input impedance right here for the amplifier, it would be in parallel with this. So we can just kind of do it that way. So this is equal to Vn. Oh, man, if I could write. And, oh, no, I've already got the I. Over, and then this is Vn minus plus AVn, right? Because V out is minus AVn, right? And then I've got, I could put the ZF right there, right? And so that gives me 1 over 1 plus A times ZF. And so if ZF equaled 1 over J omega C, it's GD, right? Then ZN equals 1 over 1 plus A times 1 over J omega C GD. And it's like, like CGD got replaced with CGD. Well, I don't know. Maybe I should say it's CN. CN equals CGD times 1 plus A. Right? In other words, a very big capacitance, which made the input impedance really low, right? It dropped the input impedance by 1 plus A, a factor of 1 plus A, right? And so this guy, even though he may be slightly smaller than that guy, if you make a common source amplifier out of this thing, he's going to have a much bigger effect on the input impedance than CGS, even though CGS is right across the input. Does that make sense? Okay, and so this is known as the Miller effect. Okay. One of the things I probably should point out to you is in your book here, in this chapter 8, there are some interesting things which have to do with what amplifiers, what types of amplifiers are good at different frequencies. And so I think there was a nice little table or something like that here. Oh, yeah. Well, for each amplifier, they have a nice little table that tells you what the input resistance is and you know, and so on, including these capacitances. So let's look and see what it would be like for I can find it for a common source amplifier. But you need to check and look at common source, common drain. You need to look at differential amplifiers and look at what the differences are, you know, in the frequency response here. So let me see if I can find that for you. Yeah, I talk about Miller effect, and somewhere here, seems like they have. Oh, I guess they didn't. We go into the hybrid pi model for the transistor, but somewhere here they've got to have. Well, they have it for the BJTs, I guess, and you can kind of infer it. It's similar for the FETs. Kind of like R pi goes to infinity. But the capacitor stuff is still there. So I guess I wasn't remembering everything right there. So, but it is nice to know what kind of an amplifier to pick, you know, when you're picking these kind of things. And this Miller effect certainly makes the common source amplifier at high frequencies not as exciting. Whereas if you look at the common gate amplifier that we did in lab, you remember the one that it had a high, it had a good high frequency response, and that's because it wasn't a an inverting amplifier, right? Yeah, it was a non-inverting amplifier. You can kind of think about it this way. You're putting in your input here between source and ground. I mean, source and ground, this is the input. This is ground right here, right? So you do have a CGS, but it's, you know, on the JFET, it's, you know, it was 5 picofarads or something. Not a lot, right? And then there is an output capacitance, CGD, but that doesn't really kill you either so much. And we had a transformer on there to make the gain, you know, pretty good as far as voltage gain, and the current gain is about 1. And the impedances, when we looked in on this thing, the impedance, input impedance was about 50 ohms. And when your input impedance is low, okay, just, you know, with the resistance, any capacitance that you have in parallel with that 50 ohms is pretty insignificant. You know, look at 1 over J omega C, where C is 5 picofarads and the resistive part is 50 ohms. You know, it's not a big deal, okay? It's on amplifiers where you want a high impedance. Like, suppose if you wanted, you know, think about a common source amplifier, you think I want a high impedance here, right? And I'm going to have, you know, no current pulling in the gate. Well, then when you put a little something across there, you know, in here that starts drawing current, then your approximation becomes way off. And that's important, that, you know, have your approximation, you know, not be way off. So, you know, the different topologies you use make a, quite a difference on, you know, how they react at higher frequencies. And just because it was good at low frequencies doesn't mean it's going to be good at high frequencies. Okay, so now let's look at BJT. So this was FETs here. This was FET models. Well, let's do BJT models. And, you know, we have the think about an NPN transistor here. You know, they got the emitter down here, the base, and the collector. And we had our model over here, which looked like this. It had a, you know, an R pi coming in here, and then there was this thing, beta IB. Here was IB here. The collector coming out here, and so, you know, it was kind of like this. So here was the emitter, collector, and base over here. Okay. So now we need to modify this guy, you know, to show what the transistor capacitances are. So can you think about, you know, when we run this transistor, you know, this is in forward bias, that's in reverse bias. Can you figure out where a capacitor might be in this circuit? Where would you put it? Yeah, there's definitely one between B and C, and they call that C mu. So you got Miller effect here too, right? You can see that already, right? There's actually another capacitor on here that isn't quite so intuitive. It doesn't come from the same physics as the C mu. The C mu comes because you got a reverse bias PN junction there, right? And so, you know, when you have a reverse bias PN junction, there's going to be a capacitance, just like we had over here with the JFET, right? But there's one more capacitance that goes on here. They call it C pi. And it kind of looks like this. C pi. And you think, oh, man, you know. Well, you know, you got the r pi here, and you know, the c pi wouldn't make much difference if r pi is really small, but if you make r pi pretty big, then c pi can start making a difference. And c pi comes from, it comes from more from Newton's law than from thinking about it physically, a capacitor, okay? If you think about the charges in the base emitter region of this transistor, you know, you're putting charges in there, and those charges are moving through, you know, this semiconductor material. And it's actually a crystal lattice kind of material, and you know, as they move through there, they don't move, you know, at the same, like the velocity of light or something. You know, they're kind of banging around and, you know, going, you know, making their way through the lattice. And it's like, it's kind of like if you think about, well, a capacitor is also kind of like a bucket. In other words, you put charges out on this plate, and it's kind of like, you know, you got a hose and you're filling up, you know, the bucket with water, right? And as you put charges in the base emitter region, okay, suppose you turned on the transistor, right? You put a whole bunch of charges in here, and finally, you know, you get a bunch of current going here and a whole lot going down the collector, right? And now you want to turn the thing off, right? Well, that whole region in this region of the transistor is just flooded with water now, right? Or charges in this case. And so it takes a while, you know, to empty that bucket. And so it's that kind of an effect, kind of a slushing effect that's going on that the C pi is, okay? It takes time, you know, F equals ma, you know, and to get those electrons all out of there again, you know, it takes time. And so the way we model that in a circuit way, you know, to show the inertia and so on of those, you know, electrons is to put a capacitor in there, okay?
So that's just to model the time it takes.
Right, yeah, it takes time to get those, you know, sweep those carriers out of the PN junction there that's the base emitter junction. And so you've got those are the two basic capacitors. And then if you want to be really kind of, you know, picky about this, there is a little resistance here. They call it RBB prime. And if you want to, you can put on a little, we actually talked about this resistor up here. I don't know what they call it, R mu or something, or R zero. That's the thing that causes the slope on that. You remember the PN, the curves went like this. Instead, they kind of go up like that, right? So there's those guys. And this, normally, if you don't put the C pi in, the RBB prime is much smaller than R pi. And it actually represents the contact resistance, the resistance between the P material here and the actual wire. It's hard to make a good electrical contact between a wire and a piece of semiconductor. If you're not careful, you'll make a Schottky diode. You know, I mean, you guys maybe made one of those, or maybe Hillary did, and working on it. Yeah, physical electronics. Yeah. So. When you put this capacitor in here, now this RBB prime isn't exactly in series with that, and it's, you know, before it was so much smaller than R pi that you just kind of ignore it. Now you can put it in there if you want to be, you know, really picky about things. So this is your new base terminal here. Now you got this thing kind of like this, okay? So how big are these things? Well, I don't know. RBB prime, maybe on the order of maybe 100 ohms or something. Sometimes it's smaller. Maybe I should put 10 to 100 ohms, something like that. C pi is on the order of 100 picofarads, sometimes a little bigger, sometimes a little smaller. C mu is on the order of maybe 10 picofarads. And R mu is on the order of, you know, 100K or something like that. Something like that. It might even be bigger than that. Yeah, I mean, you can kind of, but you know. At higher frequencies, the C pi and the C mu are going to start making a difference. And, of course, you know, C mu could be this Miller effect again, right? If you're doing a common, you know, emitter amplifier. So you can see here a common base amplifier would have a higher frequency response than a common emitter amplifier because of the Miller effect. And actually, I should show you a circuit that people use sometimes to try and reduce the Miller effect. Just as an aside here, this is called a cascode amplifier. So what they do is they take a common emitter amplifier like this, and then they put it into a common base amplifier. Or they kind of, I gotta scoot that down. Just move this down. About maybe here. So you take this is your common emitter amplifier right here. And normally, you know, there's this C mu across here, and it's still there. No matter what you do, it's still there. But if they put that into a common base amplifier, this is a common base amplifier, so maybe I should make this here. I don't know. I'll just make this C large here, and I'll put some resistor to bias this up to VCC here. And so then you put your this is your output here, V out. This is RC. And I guess I need to bias this guy. I'll bring him up here. This is a cheesy way to bias things, but it'll work for now. So this is C large, V in. This is a bias resistor, RB1 and RB2, Q1 and Q2. And be out over here. Normally, what you wouldn't have this guy in here, you just collect that collector right here, right? And then you have the Miller effect, just like we saw over here, because there's a capacitance between the input and the output. Now what happens is, this is roughly 0.7 volts here, right? And so, in other words, this is a low impedance input here, very low impedance, looking into a common base amplifier is low impedance. And so what happens here is that now there's very little capacitance between there and there, unless you built this on a breadboard or something that had some parasitic capacitance in it, right? And so now it's like you took away that ZF. Because, you know, this guy is not going up and down here. There isn't a large voltage gain, a large negative voltage gain here, but there is a large negative voltage gain between there and there. Because the same current that's going out out in the collector here is the same current basically that's going in that collector, right? So this is kind of an isolation device here. Basically got you, reduces the Miller effect. So there's all these little tricks you can do to try and improve things. Yep, mm-hmm. That's right. Things get complicated as you start adding this. Well, we'll add this to fix that. We'll add that to fix this. That's right. Yeah, gets to be a Rube Goldberg machine. So those are, the basic models of the BJT, and the NPN is the same, and the P channels over here are the same, basically. You know, small signal model is still the same. And the reason, The reason they call this a pi model is, I guess you could kind of erase the bottom here of a common emitter amplifier. You'd have a ground there, and it looks like a pi. But, yeah. And I think there may be another, let me just double check that I didn't leave something out here. There might be another resistor in here. R0, yeah, R0. That was this guy right here adds to the R0. I mean, we kind of had the R0 before, so I'm going to extend this guy out. We had the R0. This was actually the thing that made the thing go up and down. But this guy also affects that. It can go up and down too. And of course, he's in the ZF area, so he does have a similar effect there. Let's make sure I didn't forget anything else. In the book, they call this RVB prime. They call it RX. They have one for like a 2N2222 transistor, and they say this guy is 22K. This thing is 8 picofarads. The R mu was 1.5 megohms. So maybe I should make this bigger here. R mu was more like a, RO is like 100K, and R mu is like 10 megohms. I know he has 1.5 megohms. Maybe I should say 1 megohm. Okay, 1 megohm. And then they have 196 picofarads for C pi, and they have 585 ohms for the R pi with the way they've got it adjusted here, and 19 ohms for RBB prime. Okay? So that'll give you an idea, roughly what these things look like. Okay, so I don't know, I don't know what happened to Austin. He wasn't in class like last week. He missed one digital control. I can't remember. It was Friday or what?
He missed Thursday.
He missed Thursday, yeah. What's happened to Austin?
Actually, I don't really have a Yeah, no.
She likes Friday even though she's got another exam.
Yeah. I'm working all weekend, so I would rather be able to study the night before than study.
She figures her short-term memory will last for the next day. Yeah. I wanted to go into long-term memory myself.
I want that to happen, too.
But just in case.
It's there.
Well, I'm thinking that if it's on Monday, I'm going to put off studying and get
it. Oh, and then you'll be in trouble. Yeah, and then you'll be in trouble Sunday night. You'll be going, oh, no.
Yeah.
Well, do you want it Friday?
Or
sure. That's okay? Friday? Oh, man. Okay, exam Friday. I better send Austin an email. I'm just trying to think if there's any other things. In some ways, he's in deep weeds. Well, I'll have to think about whether we spend more time on this. I mean, we could do an example. In some ways, know, the way I handle these things usually is I use these things for quick back of the envelope calculations, these C's, you know, just to see whether it's going to kill me or not. But to take in a real account of all the, you know, frequency response, I use a, you know, simulator to do that usually.
Can so. We give these to you or find out?
I think Austin will bring you in the next class.
Okay.
I'm gonna give it to
You think you just slept in today?
It's possible.
Possible.
We had to write it.
Well, it's probably just, I'll tell you this, since he's not here, you know, they won't be counted late, and they need to go to him somehow anyway, so I don't know.